You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. We are so excited to be back with the first episode of our seventh season. Or is it the seventh episode of our first season? Because we're going to talk about Tenet, the time-bending new thriller from Christopher Nolan that follows the protagonist, played by John David Washington, as he tries to stop a futuristic terrorist from destroying the universe. With the theatrical system in shambles because of the pandemic, Tenet was supposed to save the box office, yet it hasn't quite lived up to the hype financially. Is it really about safety? Or was it merely the wrong film at the wrong time? This week, I'm thrilled to have back the host of face2facelive.ca, David Peck, to talk about that particular issue, as well as debate whether or not we think Nolan's film believes in free will. Welcome back to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish.
I love Chris Nolan films, so yeah. I could watch many of them over and over, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
It's pretty easy.
Well, I don't know if easy is a word when you're talking about Tenet, but anyway, we'll talk about that. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. I am so glad you can join us for the first episode, season premiere of season 7, and this week we are talking about Christopher Nolan's Tenet, and I am thrilled to have back David Peck. Welcome, David. Glad to be you could join us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a blast to talk movies with anybody, really, and to especially Christopher Nolan films. So I'm in, and thanks for having me. Hey, I just wanted to say Zoom has perfectly framed that poster behind you, and all I can see is the word dumb. So I just thought, you might want to reframe it for you know,
for future
SEO perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. That is Dumbo. Dumbo,
thank you.
For Dumbo.
Got it. That's what I thought. There you go.
It was kind of dumb. So that
that's pretty funny.
It's a fair comment.
Yeah, it's hilarious. But anyway, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad that we could do this. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm actually thrilled that there's a movie, but you said you love Christopher Nolan. I'm thrilled that there's a movie that we can actually talk about.
Yeah.
Been a while. But anyway, Tenet is the story of a secret agent played by John David Washington who embarks on a dangerous time-bending mission to prevent the start of World War III against an evil terrorist and Kenneth Branagh, who just absolutely goes nuts in this film as a time-bending terrorist. And as always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers. But before we get into the film, David, one of the things I want to talk to you about a little bit is actually the film festival, because this is the first episode of the year, and TIFF this year was a little different than normal. I would love to hear your feedback and just sort of like, what did you think of how that was?
I mean, on some levels, I feel like obviously I wasn't there, but I attended in a sense because I saw quite a few films. I did about 6 interviews, probably the fewest amount of interviews I've ever done at TIFF. Maybe the first year that I was, you know, working on face-to-face, I think I had 5 or 6 interviews. And then the craziest year was about 33 interviews, which was absolutely insane. The running around, the back-to-back, answering the phone, being late, being in the wrong place, you know, very stressful, but an amazing, exhilarating experience. So all of that, of course, didn't happen for me, which on one hand, you know, probably I'm happy about, you know. And but on another hand, you know, I think that on the other hand, on another hand, how many hands do I have? that's kind of, you know, isn't that the beauty and the joy and the fun of the festival is the buzz, the energy, the community, you know, grabbing a coffee on the fly, grabbing a hot dog if you know, you eat that kind of a thing. And fries and gravy, whatever it is on the street, and running to the next film and then having a conversation in line. I mean, I read an article that said it's going to be interesting to see what this does to Oscar buzz and how will they be able to measure that anyway. But, you know, people talking in lineups at the Ryerson Theater. Oh, hey, did you see this film? You got to go see this film. It was amazing. You know, none of that was really happening. So It was very different. I bumped into a few people who said, "TIFF, it's on."
Yeah.
Like they didn't even know it was happening. So I'd love to know what the numbers were. I mean, if I wasn't reading The Hollywood Reporter on a regular basis, I don't know that I would have known the festival was on. I didn't see advertisements for it. I saw very little in the press about it. A little bit on CBC, but not much. So, and listen, star sightings are fun, you know?
Yeah.
I was standing on a curb and a car pulled up and Nick Cage got out, you know? I mean, it's, you know, that was a few years ago. I didn't, of course, he didn't recognize me, but, you know.
Really?
Yeah, but it's, you know, that kind of stuff's fun. Yeah. It's, you know, it's, hey, can you see that guy in the background of my selfie here? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's Martin Sheen, you know? I mean, anyway, it's you know, you've done enough of them to know. So it was different. It was unique is the most positive way I can express it. But it was also, it was missing quite
yeah.
a bit.
Yeah.
You know, you can also say I attended Venice. I also attended Vancouver Festival this year, you know, but anyway, so that's a long-winded answer, I suppose, but I'm just hoping that we get back soon to a face-to-face kind of a thing. I know Hot Docs is talking about doing a hybrid already, you know,
yeah.
digital, maybe face-to-face. TIFF did some drive-ins, which I think were pretty successful from what I hear. Elizabeth and I didn't get out to one of those, but anyway, so yeah, it's a different time, and that's a trivial truth and an understatement at best.
Yeah, and I like the subconscious plug there for face to face. By the way,
oh, I have nothing subconscious about it.
That's fair. No, you know what? I have to give full credit.
That's face to face live.
CA. There it is. There it is. I've missed you, David. I have to give full credit to Bailey or Cameron Bailey and his team. I really, really do, because that was an impossible task. What they did, and in some ways, the fact that they were even able to pull it off is almost superhuman. Because you're right, like yeah, mostly virtual, and sure, it was flaws. There were flaws. I will say this: I thought the online platform that I totally expected to be problematic worked great. And the drive-ins. I didn't get to one of the drive-ins. I did get to a drive-in just the week prior to in support of the Vaughan International Film Festival. Went to a night where yep. they were doing some shorts. So I got a bit of a taste of what the experience would be like. And if it was anything like that, I thought, man, this is great. You know what? This is actually the best we can do right now. And obviously, I love the buzz. You talk about Nick Cage coming out. I remember one of my favorite TIFF moments was the first time I took one of our Screenfish writers, Jason Tai, down to TIFF. This was about 4 years ago. And he'd never been. And he said to me, he goes, "What's the big deal about TIFF?" And I'm like, "Oh, it'll be fun. You just never know what's going to happen, JT. You just never know what's going to happen." And so we walk outside of, I think we parked at the Elgin, but we were walking to Roy Thompson, and there was a premiere, had no idea what it was, and he got a selfie with Bryan Cranston. And you have to understand that for him, Breaking Bad was like, at the time, I mean, for everyone, Breaking Bad was like the height of quality TV, and he'd never been down before, and there's Bryan Cranston. Like, and I remember just seeing his face like in shock. And I was like,
"Well, it is." I mean, I'm trying to think of the first sort of name I met. I remember meeting Justin Trudeau when he was on the campaign trail, and you know, whoever, right? Somebody that you yeah. don't have you have a perception of this person because you've seen them interviewed, you've seen them on TV, you've seen them in movies, and they actually turn out to be someone who's, oh wow, you actually are a human being after
yeah.
all. You do shake hands. You do have a smile. You did laugh at my joke, whatever. That's just kind of interesting and peculiar. And I think you have to kind of, my wife, Elizabeth, it just doesn't faze her at all. I remember bumping into, at a Don Henley concert, Casino Rama. I use a fountain pen, and Eugene Levy, was at the concert, and I came out of the washroom, and there was this group of people, and I thought, "Oh, you gotta be kidding me. Don Henley's out in the crowd." And so I come over, Elizabeth's standing there, and Eugene Levy's signing autographs. Well, he clearly is a, you know, this is before Schitt's Creek, of course.
Yeah.
He's clearly a fan. And he sees my pen in my pocket, and he said, oh, can I use your pen? Do you mind if I use your pen? So I pull my pen. So he opens it up, and it's a fountain pen. He goes, who writes with a fountain pen anymore? But it was a very – I mean, it was a lovely experience in a moment, but he's just Eugene Levy.
That's exactly right? It.
Who has a very peculiar, interesting, unique kind of way of making a living. You know what I mean? And yet we somehow – by default put them on a pedestal of one kind or another, you yeah. know, and it's kind of hard not to when you can, you know, anyway, it's a very interesting thing, this whole idea. It's very, yeah, pretty interesting from a social, sociological perspective, philosophical perspective, mass media perspective,
yeah.
you know, what you do with the image, you know, anyway,
well,
what would Chris Nolan have said about seeing Tenet at a drive-in?
Oh man, that's a good question. I have no idea. I think he probably would have been fine.
Sure, he'd be a fan. I'm not sure he'd be a fan.
See, I don't. I think he would be because he really likes the theater experience. But I would argue that if it wouldn't be that he's not a fan of the experience, it would be that he's such a fan of the theater experience and wanting to maintain the theatrical that would push against it. But I mean, certainly, I don't think he would want us to be watching Tenet on our phones.
So here's the thing. I don't know what they did from a sound perspective at the drive-in, but seeing Tenet in IMAX, the one thing is the screen, and the second is the sound, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that. My Elantra speakers are just not going to cut it.
And yet it almost would have helped with Tenet in some ways to have those smaller speakers. But there's something about the theatrical. Let's go back. Just going back here, there's something about the theatrical experience in and of itself that I still think has incredible value. And that's what I missed at TIFF. I missed the lineups. I missed the theatrical. The celebrities are always fun. Love it. It's a blast. But the idea of being in a room with 1,000 people, taking in the same comment or content, and then either discussing it, the enthusiasm beforehand, like you talk about the buzz, like that is the only place in the world where I don't mind being in a lineup for 3 hours. Because sometimes the lineups are the best part. And I missed that. That was really hard for me at TIFF. And I know there was nothing that could be done. I'm not suggesting that they botched anything. I'm just merely saying that was the part that was missing for me, was that person to person contact, in anything really. But I mean, certainly in the festival. But I think that I actually do think that they should maintain this whole, anybody across Canada can watch the films. I think that was something they should maintain in the future. There is no reason why somebody in Manitoba who wants to check out a film at the Toronto International Film Festival should not be able to do that based on what they can do.
They were geo-targeted to Ontario, weren't they?
Canada.
Oh, okay. I thought it was just Ontario.
The TIFF rentals, I think some of the screeners were geo-locked to Ontario, but I had a friend in Vancouver who was able to check out a film or two from TIFF. So they checked out Wolfwalkers. I know that was one of the ones they were really excited about, and they saw it through the TIFF website.
So. Interesting. Yeah, no, I thought I'm interested to know about that, because I know VIF Vancouver was geo-locked or geo-targeted just to Vancouver.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I heard, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that they were anti-VPN as well. So they'd figured out a way to block VPNs. So you couldn't access it that way either. So anyway, everyone's a little different. And I wondered if that was also part of the reason why, because of that lock, that geo target, I found it difficult to get a hold of publicists. I found it difficult to really actually get interest. Some publicists were saying, nope, we're not doing any interviews. Some said short interviews only, no screener copies, you know, some different things this year than before. And I wondered if it's all about, and now that the Oscars have been pushed, I wonder if it has something to do with the timing behind award season and releases. And now that Bond film's been pushed, I mean, it's, yeah, everyone's trying to speculate and figure it all out. And it's, a lot of balls in the air at one time, that's for sure. You know, it's a circus is an understatement, eh?
Well, I mean, and you know what? That's a good transition too, as everything's getting pushed. I mean, here we have this week we're talking about Tenet, and Tenet is the movie that was going to save us all, was going to save the movie theater experience. And yet here it's been out in theaters for roughly six weeks, and we can still talk about it like it's a new release in the strangest of ways, just because of how things have been happening, or at least I consider it that way. It's such a bizarre situation, and Tenet was supposed to be the flag that it was safe to go back, but here we are. So, I mean, let's talk Tenet. Let's talk, David, what was your first impulses? What did you think about Tenet?
My first comment was, I couldn't believe how empty the theater was. Like, honestly, I walked in and I was in a theater that's 500-600 seats, a huge theater. And we went in with masks and hand sanitizer, nobody there. One person greeting us, didn't even look at our tickets. And there were about 30 people in the whole theater.
Wow.
And this was 2 days after it opened. So I'm sure it's fewer than that now. And, I have a friend who's in the film business locally. He's got film.ca, a little plug for him. He's local out here in west of Toronto, and they're having a tough time. People are just not coming out. So that was my first, you know, and it's interesting, right? Because that's all a part of it. If the room had been full, right, and there was that buzz, kind of exactly what we were just talking about, that changes your impression of the film. It really does. It doesn't mean it's going to be better. It just changes it, because the dark theater, you know, you before we hit the record button, you interviewed David Cronenberg's son recently about his new film. And Cronenberg said years ago, for him, it was about, you know, the dark theater, the sound, the image is created for that screen, and it's about the lighting, and it's all a part of the narrative and all a part of the storytelling. And if you cram that into a Zoom screen, what did you just do to not only the technique, but also the way the story is being communicated? It didn't ruin it. It's just different, and it changes it. And I think that's something that, you know, especially with a Nolan film, with most films, actually, I think that's something worth thinking about. I went in with high expectations. I love all of his stuff. I don't know that he's made a bad movie, in my opinion. And I'm a fan. So I'd read things like, oh, this is going to be Inception 2. I really desperately tried not to read any interviews or reviews, and I didn't. I had seen one 10 or 12 minute piece about Inception and Tenet, kind of pushing the film. Before The Empire Strikes Back, actually, they played it. I went to see that a little while back. So I went in with high expectations, loved the film, seen it a second time. It was better the second time, in my opinion. And yeah, that's first impressions. But it's a film about a whole lot of things, man. And it's all kind of wrapped up in this thriller action movie that is about memory and time travel and freedom and choice and responsibility. It's a deeply existential film. It really is. And marvelous. The music's amazing. Robert Pattinson's terrific. I mean, they're all great. They really are. Was there a weak performance in the film? I'm not sure that there was. Can you tell that I liked it, Steve?
No. can't tell. Can't tell. I know you're a big Nolan fan.
I mean, come on. The first time that someone's gotten hyperthermia from a gasoline explosion?
Yeah, that's a great line. That's a good line. It's a good line.
My son said to me, he's 15, where does he come up with these ideas?
I will say that the first time I saw it, it's not that I didn't like it. It's that I liked it a lot less than I expected the first time I saw it. And part of that was, as Nolan has gone on in his career, he has moved further into his obsession with muffled dialogue and pounding bass soundtrack. Now, I realize I'm sound like an old man when I say this, because it's like, oh man, it's so cool. Yeah, but a movie like this, it's not that that's not a problem, but a movie like this is so intricate in the way that it wants to explain it that I feel like I'm missing something every time I can't hear. And The second time I saw it, I enjoyed it much better because I could sort of relax knowing where it was going, but I actually could hear better in the theater, and I was much, much happier. So it may have just been even the theater that I was in, that they had the volume cranked up too much, because people tend to think that great sound is just loud, and that is not the case, especially you don't make an action. It's like you don't make an action sequence exciting by having quick cuts. That's a cop out, you know. And the same way, you don't have great sound design by blasting the volume. It's using it sparingly. So my first experience with it, I was like, I came out of it and I said, I liked it, but I don't know if I did, if that makes any sense. But I did see it a second time because we were podcasting. I saw it when it came out, and I saw it again this week, and I enjoyed it far, far more. It is much better written than I gave it credit for the first time, because the thing about this one is the dialogue is just flying. At some places it almost feels like at an Aaron Sorkin pace, and it was happening so quick, and it was so intricate that I wanted to understand it as well. But then he basically tells you in the film not to try to understand it anyway, because in several times, you don't need to understand it, just feel it. Well, okay.
And that's coming from the scientist, or at least the perceived to be scientist wearing a lab coat.
That's right. Well, if they're wearing a lab coat, I would assume that they have some sort of doctorate degree about, you know, time travel.
That's right. Yes, because all PhDs come with a white lab coat.
I think that's what they hand you when you get your PhD, isn't it?
Yes, and that crazy hat.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was funny. I was telling my wife about it the next day. She said, what'd you think? I said, oh, I liked it a lot more. But it's somewhat confusing, but they tell you not to worry about it being confusing and just go with it. Yeah. It's actually in the film.
But I think there is something to that. And I think, you know, I've read that part of the reason why the dialogue's muffled in some of his films is because he wants you to lean in closer and listen. And I don't know, that seems like a bit of a cop out. I don't know that that's true. I mean, who knows? I haven't seen many interviews with Christopher Nolan, so I'd be very interested to hear. But if people are tuning out because they can't hear, that's kind of not what you want as a director, as a filmmaker, as a storyteller. And I found even my son was getting a bit annoyed that he couldn't understand what was going on. Not because of the context or the way the story was being told, but he couldn't hear.
No, and that's it.
And that's a problem. So, hey, I got 40 years on my 15-year-old. If he can't hear and I can't hear, then there's something going on. It's not just the old fart, right, who prefers Smarties over M&Ms. But there's something else at play. I actually thought the theater maybe had made a mistake, you know. And then I did a quick search afterwards. No, people were complaining online about how loud it was in the mix. And that's unfortunate. But I think, though, there's something to the idea of, you don't always catch dialogue. That is the way life goes, right? Life is, and this is, it's paradox. It's contradiction. It's, and that is this film, right? I mean,
yeah.
Okay. So the cinematic beauty of the scene where the protagonist is sitting in the chair and the trains are going like this. It's stunning. They're going in opposite directions. And I saw that in the trailer. I saw it the first time. It didn't really mean anywhere near as much to me as it did the second time. Both trains going in different directions. I mean, it's a simple metaphor, but it was so much more powerful, you know, seeing it the second time around. But I experienced that the first time around, and you got to go, well, you know, did that have an impact on me the first time? Did that, you know, and did I write?
Yes. So there's
this sit back, enjoy the film, and step into the story, right? And it's hopefully going to have an impact. What's fascinating to me, Steve, about films, especially Chris Nolan films, or really thoughtful stuff put into incredibly entertaining movies.
Yes.
For the most part, maybe Following or Insomnia, I might not call entertaining, but wow, Inception, you know, all the trilogy, you know, I mean, it's Interstellar, right? I mean, it's very entertaining stuff, but incredibly thoughtful as well. And I just read a review, and I don't know who it was, but they kind of trashed the film and said, I have no idea what's going on. Did it really need to be so confusing? You know?
Well, in some ways, it's funny. Like, Nolan's work is so layered. And while you were talking there, I was listening. But one of the things that there's a fabulous article, and I wanted to pull it up, by Alyssa Wilkinson over at Vox. I don't know if you read it. I'll send you the link. But it's talking about Tenet being related to a Seder square. And a Seder square is an ancient and mysterious five-line palindrome of five words. Sator, Arepo, and Arepo is in the film, Opera, which is in the film, Rotus, and Tenet. And it's an ancient document, and it can be read in four directions. And the idea of how this has influenced the creation of the film, which when you read the article, like, it's just, it's stunning to see the sort of intricacies that Nolan, assuming that this is what he used, because it makes a heck of a lot of sense, that he was playing with in this film. So people that say, well, why does it have to be so confusing? Nolan is an obscure guy, and he likes to take something, blow it up on the macro scale, in terms of his films, which is one of the reasons they can be so good. It's also the reasons why you can get lost in them.
Well, and it's also why you need to watch it a second time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any good story is worth telling more than once and worth listening to more than once. And it's also worth unpacking. It's worth writing about. It's worth thinking about. Right. And that's the power of narrative. One of the things for me at TIFF this year, I ended up interviewing several Indigenous filmmakers and talk about storytellers and a different kind of storytelling. And we got into that it was different context. It was a different culture, obviously, and rooted in thousands of years of history, right? Oral tradition, et cetera. But what does that actually ultimately mean for you when you're sitting in the theater eating a bag of popcorn and drinking your Pepsi? Most of us just go, we paid our $15. Wow, that was good. That was bad. I'm going to recommend it. I'm not. And we move on. And I would say that story still has an impact. I think it still plants seeds, even if you don't understand it, but hopefully you're going to come back to it in some way. And I think that's why we do what we do, is hopefully, you know, to try to get others excited about these stories in the same way. I mean, if Adam Egoyan's right, you know, Cathedrals of Our Time, then, you know, and this is where we're learning things that we should be learning from sacred texts or the Socratic method, or, you know, community meetings with the Rotary Club and hanging out with friends and family. Right. But instead, where are we getting our knowledge from, you know, our devices?
Yeah.
It's, on one hand, it's kind of tragic and sad. And on another hand, I think it's actually rooted in an ancient oral tradition.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's what I love about, and it demands a second viewing. It demands a listener who's willing to pay attention. And maybe a lot of people would go, you know what, I don't want to have to pay that much attention.
Yeah.
You know, I'm watching a movie, you know, I want to relax. I want to sit back and enjoy it. So anyway, I recently interviewed Aaron Wolf about his film Tar, and it's a horror film. And it was a real treat for me because Graham Greene was on the line and was in it as well. And holy cow, Graham Greene dances with wolves. And I mean, isn't it wild? And it was just fun to have. And so as we're talking, Aaron says to me, oh, David, it's great that you're pulling these things out of the film. But you know what? I just want people to have a good time. and he agreed with that unpacking and the peeling back of the layers. But at the same time, it was like, yeah, you know what? This is a movie for Halloween. And I just hope people enjoy it.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the other articles I read about Tenet was the fact that they were saying why Tenet was not the movie to save us all. And the very fact is, Tenet is a puzzle box, and not a puzzle box the way that Knives Out is a puzzle box. This is a layered, confusing at times of film. Whereas coming out of a pandemic where they were marketing it as a Nolan film, so it should be super exciting, so everybody's excited because Nolan is his own brand, Nolan people are going to show up for. But the movie isn't a lot of fun. It looks great. Like, you talk about the two trains coming in the other directions, all this stuff. Looks amazing. But it doesn't have... It's not a lot of fun compared to, say, Wonder Woman. You know, which if you were, you know, arguably under that idea, Wonder Woman may have done much better even under the circumstances, because not because it's Wonder Woman, but because the tone fit the mood of people. So it's not that the muted box office, and it's done quite well overseas. It has not done very well in America, but there's very, like, it's just so crazy. And they look at it and some people are saying, see, it was a failure. But it's not that it was a failure. It may have just been the wrong film at this moment, where it is, because it requires effort. Like, this is a film that does require effort. And that's not even a shot at it. Like I said, I very much enjoyed it the second time around. I actually had more fun the second time around. I feel like I would have more fun in a sequel, because now I sort of get how the world works. And the first half of the movie is trying to figure out how this world operates.
Well, okay, so I just think you actually touched on something that he wants us to take away. Mm. None of us are going to figure out how the world works.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the point, in my opinion. That is the train going this way and the train going that way.
Mm.
It's paradox, it's contradiction, it's complexity. It is tough to figure out life, you know? And there's a reality, and yet there's this fantastical thing, time travel embedded into it, which obviously takes it out of our world for the time being, at least.
Right.
I don't know anyone who's invented time travel, but I do love that about anything that requires a second viewing or a second reading.
Yeah.
And it requires you to go deeper and peel back, and hopefully to have a conversation like this. And again, COVID, you can't. People didn't get a chance to go out and hang out and have a drink afterwards and talk about the film they just saw on Friday night. Right.
Mm.
I'd be interested to know if the Bond film came out instead of Tenet, would it have done a lot better? I'm not convinced it would, because I think people stayed away, not because Tenet was a confusing film. I think they stayed away because of fear. I think a lot of people have stayed away from the theater because for some reason being in an enclosed space, a huge enclosed space, is a lot different than sitting on a patio or whatever, right? And no one will ever really know unless they had a release, like, if they're going to, well, it looks like they're not going to release another one, because now Wonder Woman's been pushed again, I think.
Yeah,
now
Christmas Day.
I think, what was the other one that got pushed? Dune. Dune's been pushed into 2022.
It's pushed a year. Pushed a year. Everything's pushed back a year.
Which is heartbreaking for me, by the way.
Yeah. No, I know. I was looking forward to that one, too. Well, you know, it's interesting. I think you're right. I think you're onto something there. But, you know, talking about Tenet, then the ideas behind Tenet, you know, you talk about, trying to think of exactly what your words were a couple of moments ago, but you made a comment about the way the world works and stuff. And this film is very much about that. It's very much about that. So I wanted to throw out this question too. When thinking about the film, one of the things I wanted to know is, like, Neil, Robert Pattinson, and this is the first, I think, Robert Pattinson film that I saw him in where I was like, oh, I really like that. I really like him in this film.
He's so great.
He's a great actor, but this is the first one that I was like, oh, Robert Pattinson. Neil makes a claim at the end of the film that he says that he has faith in the mechanics of the world, which is funny in a film where the mechanics of the world are so, well, pun intended here, backwards and forwards. So I was wondering what you thought of that comment. Do you agree, do you disagree, or how it works in the context of the story?
I remember lots of lines. I don't remember that line, but that's just
the
before
final,
he sort of,
it's the final
just
speech.
Before he goes back again, isn't it?
That's where he's going back in and he's saying, like, you should trust the process.
Yeah.
And
right.
And the protagonist says, you're talking about faith. He says, well, faith in the mechanics of the world.
Right. Right. Well, what's interesting is I think the mechanics of the world in this world, you know, the Christopher Nolan world, the Tenet world, are all rooted in, I believe, freedom and choice.
Hmm.
So yes, it's mechanistic, but only insofar as freedom and choice and responsibility are driving that mechanism.
Hmm.
So So if you want to go, you know, so time travel, you've got to make decisions. You've got to make choices. I mean, I love that scene at the end with Sanjay's wife and the protagonist sitting in the back of the car. And, you know, I don't know how many spoilers you want to give away here, but, you know, she's surprised, right? But the protagonist is the one who's been making so many of these decisions and choices, you know, this cause and effect all the way along. And I know that some would argue that's just, you know, determinism in another form. But I think it was the woman in the lab coat, and I think her name is Barbara, who says something about it may be tape, but either way, you're the one who creates it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's you, like you. So for me, that's why Pattison's character, Neil, has faith, because it's rooted in relationship. It's rooted in people. And ultimately, I mean, for me, ultimately, this is a film about the bomb that didn't go off. Mm. And the bomb that didn't go off doesn't go off because somebody cared, right? And so does that make sense? Like, connected to choice, connected to freedom, connected to responsibility. Yes, there's all these, you know, mathematical and scientific explanations, and there's the what do they call it? The algorithm.
Yeah.
You know, which is so mathematical, but I don't think mathematics had anything to do with this. You know, it's really quite, for me, it's a profoundly human kind of world, and yet also very much rooted in what appears to be, you know, deep science, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you say it, because I hadn't framed it that way. Like, to me, when he's the way that they set it up, to me, it feels so mathematical. With someone at the center. And you know, people have said, oh, this is just like Inception. The truth is, I think it's almost more like Interstellar, in that, you know, at the center of the void is one person. Not Matt Damon.
And that one person is you and I.
See, that's so, the interesting thing to me. Now, you know,
It's not, you know, I think, yeah. So we are meant to be the protagonist. What are we going to do? What choices are we going to make? Are we going to wear the mask? What side of that screen are we going to be on? You know, and again, we're back to that idea. And I think that's why Neil has faith in the mechanics, because of his ability to do what he does sort of in a circular way. He kind of sees the future, but he's able to affect the past. It's really quite cool, you know, and it's a really profound... Kierkegaard, and I say it all the time, but Kierkegaard said the only way you understand the world is by looking back, but the only way you can live it is by moving forward. And that to me is so deeply entwined in this film. And that's what I love about an action film that's making that point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That change is possible. That this little...
But it's not. Or is it? Isn't it? Well, because the whole thing that Neil says like six times, what has happened, happened. But that past is their future. So are they're not affecting change based on the way the mathematics works. The movie opens with, I don't remember her name, Elizabeth Debicki's character, diving off a boat that she invariably becomes that person. So she's not really affecting change at all. This was a bomb that, based on the way that they're rolling... The bomb's never going to go off in the first place at all. I would argue, because I would say, believe me, I'm not saying that you can't affect change. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about the mechanics of this particular film.
Mm-hmm.
I think
the message of Tenet is that you have the ability to change. Would you say that Christopher Nolan's a determinist in that sense?
I'm not sure, but I would say that, I mean... More than one occasion, Neil makes the comment that what has happened has happened.
It's a thread that runs throughout. It's a thread that runs throughout the whole. I think Martin Donovan's character at the beginning, I think he says the same thing as well.
Yeah,
remember when they actually save his life, and he says that whole opening sequence is a test.
Yes, that's right. And not everybody passes.
Whatever happens, going to happen. Why would you test somebody?
No,
and if we all believe, what was his line? We all believe we're going to run into the burning building.
Right.
That's a choice. That's a choice, right? And you might say to yourself here internally, I'm going to run in and I'm going to save those lives. But when you're in the middle of it, when you're in the heat of it, that's where the rubber sort of meets the road, if you will. Or, I'm just trying to think of a way of phrasing it with respect to this film. But for me, I'm not sure that she would have dove in, is that a word? Dived? I'm not sure. off the front of the boat without having made those choices in the first place, if that makes sense. And this is this is a fundamental problem with, you know, time travel films, and I've always been frustrated by it. And they even call it out in the film, the grandfather's paradox, for heaven's sakes, right? So on a certain level, they frustrate me, time travel films, because they're paradoxes, you know, through and through, like, you know, they just don't add up, basically.
Oh yeah, right? And that's why Nolan says, don't think about it too hard, just you know, feel it, or feel it. But this is the interesting thing about this movie, is because I almost think that he wants to talk about free will as choice. But by the way he ends, I don't know if he lands there. I don't know if he lands more on the deterministic side, because the faith is in the mechanics.
I don't remember if it's the protagonist or Neil, and it might even be somebody says we can't use that as an excuse. Somebody actually says that. And I can't remember whose character it is. But yeah, we can't use that as an excuse to not interact, to not step in, to not seek to change. I mean, these guys are going into the future to change the past, or going into the past to change the future, however you want to look at it, because that's the whole idea. It's a palindrome, right? You can spell it the same way forwards and backwards. I mean, we haven't even gotten in the theater. We've looked at the poster and we're already experiencing this world, right? Love that. I so love that about this film. And it'd be interesting to watch the trailer and see how much directorial sort of control he had over the trailer. And what does the trailer actually do to us, if that's creating part of the experience before we've even stepped in? But yeah, I seem to remember somebody saying that's not an excuse. So in other words, we're back to responsibility again, right? Because if it's determinism, then why bother? We're one step away from fatalism, right? It's all, whatever's going to happen is going to happen, right? So, what? And here's an answer to that too. And I saw it the second time, and it's a scene when they're, I don't know, I think they're on the oil rig, or it's the protagonist and Kenneth Branagh's wife. And in the background is, and I wrote it down and I'm going to find it, a sign on the wall, a little wooden sign. And it says, ships in the harbor are safe, but that's not what ships are for. That's not somebody who believes in determinism. I don't think ships are meant to be out at sea. They're meant to be, your life is meant to be lived. They're not meant to be, you know, roped into the dock. Right. Yeah. Anyway, so that's sort of, I mean, I'm sure Sam Harris would disagree with me right now, but anyway, for me, it was all about, being in charge.
Well, that I see, that's, and I agree with you. I agree with you on that. And one of the things I think is so interesting is that you have someone who is called the protagonist. He is the one directing the action. And now actually they say to him, and they even say to him, you're not the protagonist, you're a protagonist. So there are multiple people here living on their streams. But it is interesting that the villain is the one who sees himself as the god who's changing things. You know, you're just a madman or a god of sorts, he said. And I have to say, I honestly think, you know, I've seen Branagh. Branagh's a brilliant actor. I love him. I still think his Hamlet version is the definitive version of Hamlet I've ever seen. And
Henry V, man.
I have not seen his Henry V. But he's a stinking beast in this one. And I like him doing like this. I don't even know what accent that was. It was like, I don't even know what accent that was supposed to be, but it was just like, he's all in. And I'm like, I have never seen him be that beastly ever. And I was having a blast with him on screen.
Would you use the word cruel?
Cruel?
Yeah.
I think I would in his case.
Yeah.
I think I would because, you know, he was willing to push that boundary just over the edge of, you know, quote unquote, normal villainy. In certain cases, he wasn't like, you know, the Joker. He wasn't an anarchist by any stretch. He wasn't like that, but he was just like, he was just mean. And, I had a blast.
And yet the second time I saw the film, I think I saw a narcissist for sure. And especially in that scene where he talks about being a god, but I also saw a man who was terminally ill, who desperately wanted to be loved. And I don't know. I mean, maybe on a third viewing, there would be some other bits of business there, but it does make me wonder if their relationship, however that might play out in this crazy world, this algorithmic world, you know, would it have been different if their relationship had have been more wholesome, had have been more loving, had have been more affirming and inclusive, however you want to, you know, you want to call it. But yeah, I'm with you. He had a bit of a death camp leader sort of feel to him in this film. And I'm a big fan and have been for years. And I was just trying to pull up one of his really early films that I think he directed, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was scissors were the metaphor in this film, and I'm pretty sure Emma Thompson was in it. What is it called? Anyway, Dead Again. It's called Dead Again.
Dead Again.
I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. I'm going to try to pull it up here and see, but it's definitely worth going back and looking at for sure. 1996, by the way, was Hamlet, if you can believe
it. I love that film. It's brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. It's pretty long, but beautiful, wonderful film. Let me just see here if you'll give me 2 seconds. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is part of the point of Nolan. It'd be interesting to ask him, you know, do you just want to really make smart action movies? Or are you really trying to make, you know, at the same time, as a writer, as a thinker, as an artist, this philosophical point about our ability to step in, right?
Yeah.
You know, Christopher Walken said in The Prophecy, as the angel Gabriel, study your mathematics, kids. It's the key to the universe.
Hmm.
Well, I'm not convinced that Nolan agrees with that. Maybe he does. But Tenet doesn't give me that algorithmic world works hand in hand with human choice and human emotions. And yeah, it's not an either or. It's a very intertwined, complicated both hand.
I see what you did there with a little hand motion. I see what you did there.
Nice.
No,
nice.
I agree with you there. I think it's a both hand, and obviously I'm not deterministic in that sense. And I really think that Nolan, like you said, I think Nolan really does agree with choice, and I think that's why he's a protagonist, not the protagonist. But at the same time, it's so interesting to me that the way the film ends, it's an intentional loop, and he loves loops. Like, he's obsessed with time. Even Dunkirk, which you podcasted on us with Dunkirk. Dunkirk's a loop. Dunkirk is a movie that takes a little bit of time, a longer period of time and an extended period of time, and compresses them all down into different ways of viewing the battle at Dunkirk.
Very hard to follow. I found the first viewing, but incredible experience. And I think I saw it 3 times, and I should probably go back and see it again, or watch it again. But second time, oh, okay. I'm seeing this. I'm seeing how these stories intertwine, how the telling of these stories intertwine. And I think for me, another thing about Tenet is it's all connected. It's all connected. Anyway, I mean, either way you run the tape is the quote. you made it happen. Hmm. Either way you run the tape, you made it happen. So the tape means it's determined, it's done, it's in the past, whatever happened has happened, but you made it happen. And
yeah.
I think that ultimately is the takeaway. That is, and I think that's the turning on its head. That's the trains going in opposite directions of that mechanistic world. So it's mechanistic, not in a Newtonian sense that it's all boom, boom, boom. It's a puzzle, but it's with 500 other puzzle pieces thrown in from a different puzzle. Now try to solve that. And isn't that what life's all about? Isn't that the complexity of relationships and politics and extreme poverty and the list goes on?
Nolan likes to give more questions than answers in his work.
Totally.
That's the way he likes to do it. And I think that some directors use it as a cop-out, quite frankly. You know, oh, well, that's left up to the audience to decide. I think Nolan actually does it because he's trying to answer those questions himself. Like, even, you know, people really bothered by Inception because it ends with the spinning top. But
a spinning top that we sort of see maybe,
I know.
Maybe fall.
Is it going? But it's like, I that's Nolan being playful with the audience. Like,
so here's why I don't think Nolan. So you just brought up Inception, very dangerous, because I thought we were sort of wrapping up soon, but maybe now.
I was going to, but maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. One of my favorite scenes in Inception is early on when DiCaprio's character asks Ellen Page.
Oh, Ellen Page. That's who you're talking
Ellen
about.
Ellen Page, who is absolutely marvelous in this film and I think incredibly super talented, and I love pretty much everything she's ever done. He's got a piece of paper. He's got a piece of graph paper and he says, make me a puzzle that I can't solve in under, what is it, under a minute or something?
Right. Yeah.
So it's graph paper. She tries twice. He solves it both times. The third time, she turns the piece of paper over. It's now blank. And she makes a puzzle that he can't solve. That's why I don't think Christopher Nolan's a determinist. That's why he doesn't just believe in the mechanics of the universe. The Cartesian graph was what boxed Ellen Page's character in. She flips it over to the blank page because that's what life really is.
Hmm.
And now is able to scribble out this maze that DiCaprio's character can't figure out. That's an awesome detail to me. And I did thrilled to say that my 12-year-old daughter caught that the first time she saw Inception. I had to watch it four times before I caught that detail.
Well, Mr. Peck, I mean, you have defeated me, sir. I have no response.
I'm not trying to defeat you.
No, I know. I'm just kidding. No, that's well played. Yeah. I could see that.
Well, and I think too, and I'm going to go back. I can't wait to see this a third time, by the way, because I just have so much fun at his movies. I love being entertained and being made to think as well. And have you ever, Steve, you've done a lot of interviews. Do you ever say to a director or especially directors, because they're sort of their babies, I guess, these films. Do you ever say, hey, is it okay to say that your film was entertaining because, you know, it was dark or melancholic or something like that? It's kind of weird, right? Because normally you think of a thoughtful film as not being entertaining, right?
Yeah, it's like they have to be mutually exclusive.
Or it's got subtitles or whatever, but I love both, and I think Nolan does it really well. I mean, The Dark Knight is marvelous. You could write an essay on that film, right? But holy cow, it's entertaining, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, some wonderful stuff going on, that's for sure. But I want to go back a third time and listen for that Neil's sort of final line. I've got faith, but in the, what is it?
In the mechanics of the world, not
in the mechanics of the world.
Not an excuse to do nothing is what it says. That's right. It's right before the excuse to do nothing. It's right before that.
Which is beautiful, right? And why couldn't the mechanics of the world be rooted in human relationship?
I hear we're wrapping up, but I will counter that point with this. If it's based on human relationship, then why is the film focused on the protagonist who is in control the whole time?
But as you said, he's one
a protagonist. It's a fair point.
He's one. If this is a big machine, we're all a part of it, you know? I mean, it's a way of trying to be positive, I suppose, taking a negative and turning it into a positive. We're not just cogs in a pieces of a machine. And if we are pieces of machine, we're interactive. We're face to face, you know?
Cheap plug. I love it.
That's right.
No, I agree.
We're face to face live.ca.
There it is. Yeah. There it is. Yeah. Yeah, you can't do that as easily or as seamlessly with Screenfish. So it's a lot harder for me to do. It's like you're on a screen fishing for more fishing for more. That is part. Oh, we got to bring that back too.
Yeah, but at least you got the net in there too, don't you?
That's true. That was a coincidence. Somebody had screenfish.com. We actually bought .net because it was available, but it works.
It does. It works, screenfish.net. Yeah. Hey, listen, I actually just on a sort of, I guess we're closing, but on a closing note, I actually did email two of Nolan's agents, I guess, or managers. And of course they didn't respond. And I tried to be funny about, if you are a determinist, you've already probably hit the delete button or something like that. And then I put in brackets, and I guess that really wouldn't matter because you wouldn't be reading this sentence anyway. Like, I tried to have a little bit of fun with them, but they of course didn't respond.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. That's fantastic. Well, I'm sure they're listening to this right now, and I'm sure they'll be calling you later on today.
Without a doubt. By the end of the week.
By the end of the week.
Did you catch Pattison's token?
What?
Did you see that little nice little shout out? So I caught it the second time. You in the opera, you see a bag, and on the bag is hanging a little token.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of the film, it's like that callback. Oh, wow. We really were in a loop. And anyway, I got it the first time, but I didn't really see what the meaning of it was. So I guess the message is for anyone who hasn't seen it is, pay attention.
Yeah, pay attention is exactly it.
There's lots going on.
Well, with that being said, David, let's screen it or skip it. Tenet. Screen it or skip it?
I think it's a screen it all the way.
I'm going to say he's not going to like me. He's not. I'm sorry. I'm going to get hate mail from Christopher Nolan. Just because of the pandemic, I say wait it out.
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah.
I would say screen it because I think this is a great film to see on the big screen. It is work. I don't mean work as in like it's bad. I mean work as in like it's complex.
Yeah.
And you have to pay attention like you just said. I would say just wait till it's out on video at this point. And it's coming out, I think, end of November or something like that. And you can watch it at home because of safety.
Great film, man. It's one of those that'll be looked on in when people years from now look at his career and they start, connecting dots and looking for threads and those types of things. And there'll be plenty to draw from on this film. It may not be at the top of his list, but it's worth it. It's worth the time, in my opinion.
I agree with you there. It's interesting that you say that because I had been thinking the first time I saw it, I said this is middle of the pack to low end Nolan, not because of I like the concept, but I just couldn't get it. The second time I saw it, I felt like this could be a film that people look back on as much better as time goes on. I think this like some of Nolan's work. I think has been looked on more highly, and then as time gone on, it's sort of faded into the background. I think this will be one that sort of goes the opposite direction, and people will look at as better than it was when it first came out. And let's be serious, a lot of people just haven't seen it. So I do think it was far more, and I hesitate to use the word based on our conversation, but entertaining, especially the second time around, it was far more entertaining. So. To me, I'm saying stream it, but, I think that, it just because only primarily because of, certain global situations and whatnot, but, it is worth a theater viewing if you're in a safe area for sure. So
thanks for having me.
No, David, thank you for coming on. Is there anything you'd like to plug? I mean, it's great to be face to face with you here that we can chat.
I'd love to plug, obviously, my podcast. It's what I'm focusing on right now. I'm in a bit of a transition phase. I've got like 15 interviews in the queue waiting to go live over the next couple of months. A lot of interesting interviews. One of my favorite interviews from TIFF was Michelle Latimer and a film called Inconvenient Indian. You got to see it. Another film that's going to be controversial, quite provocative, and again, not usually something I would watch, but a film called Violation. And I had one of the most fascinating interviews with the director and the writer and the actress from the film. It's difficult to watch, but wow, a conversation about trauma and mental health and all kinds of really interesting things. And just to see them get intimate and say, wow, this was a real personal story for us. You start to think there's more going on than meets the eye to this crazy thing called movie making, you know? And it's not just about being entertained. It's about a new way of looking at the world. And I think that's an amazing thing. So yeah, face-to-facelive.ca and you know what, please leave a review, and I'm sure you feel the same way, yeah. Steve, you know, give me a thumbs up, give us a thumbs up on YouTube if you're watching this, and iTunes, a star or two at least,
yeah,
would be nice, rating. But 4 or 5 would be better. Yeah. And you know what? It's so funny, Steve. It's a lot of work to leave a review on iTunes, and this is why it's hard to get them. You know,
yeah.
It takes about 2 minutes of people's time, but honestly, it's painful, right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out a way to get people. I'm trying to come up with a fun contest. So if you got any ideas, let me know.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And especially with, like, you're right about reviews on iTunes. I mean, they would claim they're user friendly, but they really are sort of a pain to do. So
no, it's really challenging. Hey, another movie you need to see. I was thrilled to interview David Thewlis recently, for his new film, Eternal Beauty. I don't know if you've seen it yet,
nope.
But Sally Hawkins is in it. It is one of the most interesting, thoughtful, demanding, delightful films I've seen in a while. And it's an indie film, and it's mental health, schizophrenia, but it's funny and it's insightful. And yeah, you got to see it. And it's going to be one of those that unfortunately probably isn't going to get a ton of notice, but yeah, anyway, so there's another little shout out for a great film that's kind of under the radar right now.
Awesome. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's a great catch. All right. Thanks, David. Thank you so much. Love so having you on.
Always a pleasure, and good to see you. Stay safe.
Absolutely.
Thanks again for having me.
Anytime. You know I love having you on. And for you at home, a reminder that you can find us a lot in more places. I guess I can say that now. We are apparently on the Amazon's podcast stream. We are on there as well. We are on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Screenfish Radio is in a number of places available. If you go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More. Small group questions where you try and figure out the puzzle box that is Tenet with people that you've seen the film with as well. We will be back next week with, I believe next week is Moneyball. We're going to look at Moneyball since the World Series is on. And we're going to have some fun with that as well. I'm looking forward to it. So, David, thank you again. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.